This is an RNZ podcast.
Kia ora koutou katoa, nau mai, haere mai. Welcome to the Midday Report Essentials podcast with me, Charlotte Cook. On today's episode, we'll get the latest on the junior doctors' strike as well as updates from Israel's planned military action in Rafah. And the opposition party Labour accuses the government of scaling back its commitment to Nelson Hospital. And not to forget the oh-so-fashionable Met Gala. Personally, I'm worried our very own Taika Waititi might overheat in his leather suit. And also concerned that the designers all forgot there are stairs at the event. With all the ups and downs and Kim Kardashian's cardigan, here's today's episode. And emergency departments around the Motu are open, but without the support of thousands of junior doctors who are on strike over pay cuts. They say the latest pay offer from Te Whatu Ora would result in a pay cut for staff and specialties that are already struggling to recruit and retain workers. Around 2,500 junior doctors have walked off the job from 7 this morning until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. The New Zealand Resident Doctors Association says it's ludicrous to be cutting pay in specialties such as psychiatry, radiation oncology and general practice where there are already critical shortages. Dr. Bill Liu is a psychiatry registrar in Dunedin and is also Executive Secretary and Treasurer of the Resident Doctors Association. Tēnā koe. A big day for junior doctors. Why are you personally striking today?
Kia ora, Charlotte. Thank you for having me. I think you summarised very well around some of the reasons why we are striking. For me in particular, I felt that there is an obligation as a resident doctor to actually raise the concerns, not only related to the new pay issues that you outlined early on, but also there are some non-remuneration related issues that are offered by Te Whatu Ora that are going to have a significant impact on the sustainment and generation of workforce for public health system.
So are you one of the doctors who is facing a pay cut, or is that your colleagues?
Not me in particular, because luckily enough in Dunedin we have a very good arrangement and support that protecting registrars in psychiatry such as myself. But if hypothetically I'm moved to another part of the country, it's very likely I'm going to face a pay cut.
And of what sort of percentage? Around 12%, I understand?
Up to 12%, yes.
Mm. And so despite it being a smaller number of the overall group that are impacted by these cuts, there appears to be quite a strong support base of union members to carry out this action.
Absolutely. I think the small number is not necessarily the best way to look at things. I'll give you one example that there will be 11 radiology oncology registrars going to be facing a pay cut with the offer from Health New Zealand. However, the 11 registrars is out of a total cohort of 24 registrars in the entire country. So now we are talking about 50% of the workforce is actually being impacted. So I don't think the small number per se is relevant here, but rather the disproportional impact on the workforce itself.
If you look at this situation now, this isn't impacting the immediate to short term, but what does this mean for long term in the health sector with pay offers and conditions like this in terms of people wanting to train and join the industry?
I think people are disheartened by it. And I think we are, for lack of a better description, we're almost recruiting for Australian medical force to actually pushing them towards overseas and Australia in particular, because they pay roughly around 40% more than how much we get paid in New Zealand. So I think we already having a crisis of primary care. We're already having a crisis of mental health. And now if we're actually proposing to provide pay cuts for psychiatry, for mental health, for public health after we're coming out of COVID, for pathology, which we have a shortage of, and for GP, and for medical specialties, I think we're really doing a disservice, not only for the short to immediate to short term, but for the long term of the country as well.
Tēnā koe, thank you for joining me. That is Bill Liu, a psychiatry registrar in Dunedin. And just again, junior doctors walked off the job from 7 this morning and won't be back until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, about 2,500 of them. 100,000 people have been ordered to evacuate Rafah after a ceasefire deal between Hamas and Israel fell over. Israel says it will continue with its planned military operation in the southern Gaza city to maintain pressure on Hamas. This comes after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu turned down the Islamist group's ceasefire offer, saying it doesn't meet key demands. Further negotiation plans are set to take place, but are unlikely to close before a ground attack on Rafah, which agencies say will be catastrophic. Relief Aid founder and executive director Mike Seawright joins me now. Kia ora. What might another Israeli ground attack on Rafah mean and look like for civilians?
A ground offensive, Charlotte, in Rafah will be catastrophic for the families that are living in Rafah now. They've been forced from across the country into the southern part of Gaza, compressed up against the Egyptian border with literally nowhere else to go. And they're now, 100,000 of them, roughly the size of Dunedin, have been forced out of their homes with nowhere practical to go to. They are literally moving to open sand dunes with little or no infrastructure to go to. Just imagine if we saw Auckland or Dunedin levelled and all of our homes destroyed, families forced to flee but nowhere else to go. I can't imagine what I would do with my family in this situation.
What sort of impact will a ground offensive on Rafah have? You've got the size of Dunedin moving to a flattened piece of land that has nothing there, and then you've got humanitarian aid operations trying to go in. What sort of options are there for aid in conditions like that?
Well, delivering aid in these conditions is extremely difficult. First of all, we have to deal with the security situation, as we've seen in not so distant times. Being an aid worker in Gaza offers you almost no protection. We've seen lots about the international aid workers that have been killed recently, but also what's not commonly talked about is the number of Gazan aid workers, such as our own staff members late last year. Three of them were killed delivering aid, just doing their job, I should say. So it's extremely difficult, the security situation, in practical terms, when you're trying to navigate roads that are under direct fire, trying to find vehicles and no fuel. It's extremely difficult under the best of circumstances in Gaza to deliver aid. With the Rafah offensive, this is going to become all but impossible.
Thank you very much for that update. That is Relief Aid founder and executive director Mike Seawright. That's just reporting on 100,000 people, roughly the size of Dunedin, being ordered to evacuate Rafah before a ground offensive from Israel is expected. The Labour Party says the government is scaling back its commitment to Nelson Hospital and cutting frontline health services by changing the plans for a new hospital. Last year, Cabinet signed off on building a new acute services building, but Labour says this has quietly changed to a plan to build a series of smaller buildings instead. Labour's health spokesperson Dr. Aisha Verrill joins me now. Kia ora, what exactly are your concerns about this proposal of smaller buildings?
Kia ora, Charlotte. Thanks for having me on. What we're concerned about is in government we made that decision for a single building. That was the clinically prepared option that was put to us after extensive work on those options. What we were told then is that other options, including having what was probably two main buildings, meant that more difficult from the clinical point of view, getting patients and staff between where they need to be, but also key parts of the hospital wouldn't be in the seismic strengthened building that was designed to survive a rupture of a major earthquake on the Alpine Fault. So we agreed with the option that was going to be best for the patients in Nelson and the surrounding area. We're very worried by a departure from that to whatever the smaller phase set of buildings is.
Well, will it actually cut capacity?
Well, they have not been clear on that, but the advice that we got from Te Whatu Ora after extensive work on the options was that it wasn't possible to send them back and do further work on options to both save costs and keep the same clinical outcomes. So if you want to save costs on this building, you are necessarily going to end up with worse services. That's the advice we had, which is why we decided to proceed.
The Health Minister says $73 million has been allocated to the design and enabling groundworks for this hospital, but it's still largely in the design phase, so they can change their mind here.
Well, as you know, these are really big projects that go on for 10 years. That is the time over which this hospital build would occur on, over other similar builds like Dunedin happen as well. Of course, they need to be funded across multiple budgets. Even when you do fund them out of a single budget, there still can be changes that happen across the way. So it's just not feasible to say that you can set it and forget it and subsequent governments won't have to make an adjustment to the funding at some point. The issue we have here is that National always do this. They always scale back health capital infrastructure, and that's how we end up not having the hospitals that we need as a country.
Tēnā koe, thank you for joining me. That is Labor's health spokesperson, Dr. Aisha Verrill. It's the one day of the year where we get to become fashion experts, as the long list of celebrities strut their stuff at the Met Gala. The highlight of the fashion calendar is run by major international fashion magazine Vogue, and it kicked off in New York at around 10 o'clock this morning. That's New Zealand time. So, for all the latest drama, I'm joined by our executive editor of Lifestyle and Entertainment, Lucy Corey. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Charlotte.
Okay, so let's talk the basics, the theme, the dress code, what's happening?
Okay, so the theme for this year's exhibition is Sleeping Beauty's Reawakening Fashion. Now, look, from some of the images I've seen this morning, it seems that some of the looks on the carpet should have been left to snooze, because not all of them should have been reawakened. But this is kind of the biggest night on the fashion calendar. It's a bigger deal than the awards shows like the Oscars or the Grammys, because designers can go a bit wild, and they're interpreting the theme quite liberally.
Yeah, I've seen a fair amount of very unique expressions.
Well, many of the things, the looks, I think, are more, the bad fairy from Sleeping Beauty, not fairy princesses.
Yes.
Though there are plenty of those as well. The exhibition, actually, the theme has actually come from the Vogue magazine, who runs the whole show, says that it's not to do with the Brothers Grimm or Disney, but it's the celebration of clothing and fashion so fragile that it can't ever be worn again, which is not very 2024.
It goes against it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about things that we actually are really invested in, the best looks.
Oh, I think it's, well, I haven't been able to be glued to it all morning. Best look I've seen so far is Devine Joy Randolph, who listeners might remember won an Oscar back in March for her role in The Holdovers. She's wearing this incredible denim ensemble. It's in the style of like a 17th century ball gown, but it's made from denim. By Zach Posen is the designer, who's currently doing a collab with Gap. It's the US kind of everyday clothing brand.
Very quickly, because we're rapidly running out of time, but a couple of notable mentions. Tyler carried up the stairs in her dress.
Made of sand.
Amazing. They picked her up under the armpits and lifted her up the stairs. Incredible. And then we've got our Kiwi superstar, Taika, there, in what looks to be an all-leather suit.
I don't know whether to hope it's leather or that it's pleather, but it's chocolate brown from head to toe, including a tie. Be interesting to see if that look catches on in Aotearoa. The thing the internet's most upset about seems to be that Kim Kardashian is wearing a cardigan.
And it doesn't look like just any like new cardigan, not designer. It looks like bobbled.
Apparently it's cashmere.
Amazing. Well, unfortunately, listeners, we have to leave our Met Gala chat there. But thank you very much, Lucy Corrie. I'm sure she'll have more hot takes on our RNZ website along with the live blog. Tēnā koe and thanks for listening to today's episode. Keep an eye out for Apopo, tomorrow's episode, wherever you get your podcasts from.